Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Justin Orkney, Commercial Director at Standard Power. We talk about Standard Power's 1.2 gigawatt development in Ohio, how power companies and mining companies are integrating, and how to get a job in the Bitcoin space. Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Justin, welcome to the podcast. Long time coming. Really excited for today's conversation. But you're down in Tampa enjoying the sunshine. Wish you were here in the studio with me in Denver, but it's okay.
Yeah. I came down to Tampa to join the Bitcoin Bay guys. They were doing a meetup at dinner. They're launching their nonprofit. It's amazing what they've got going on down here. So I wanted to come down, be a part of it, show my support. And Tampa's beautiful this time of year. So it made all the sense in the world, and here I am.
And you went to like some food thing, right? Like, what was the best thing you ate there?
Yeah. So they were doing Sound Money, Sound Food was the theme of the dinner. And they were at a restaurant that is specifically focused on sourcing ingredients and meat from the local community and cooking it in ways that Bitcoiners would probably appreciate. No seed oils was a big theme of the night. Just making sure you're using all original food, actual food ingredients. And so I think the best thing I had last night was boar's head, or there was just some strip of pretty tough meat, but it was delicious. It had a great salting to it, and it was incredible. And then, but the banana Fosters at the end was pretty exquisite as well. So
all around, making me really hungry.
Yeah. Making myself hungry too. It was great. It was really good. And it was so exciting to see the message that they brought to the event, but then also the restaurateurs that were there that were excited to, it was a new restaurant kind of opening up as well. So hopefully they'll get support from the community. Sometimes restaurants that step out in this direction might have a more difficult time than others in terms of operations and being profitable, because it's definitely not the cheap way to source local and cook everything the right way, the healthy way. So it was exciting to see all that come together.
Love that. Yeah, let's jump right into like Standard Power stuff. Your title is eluding me at the moment, but again, strategy, right? Like
commercial director.
Commercial director. I thought I saw strategy in the LinkedIn title, but give me a profile on Standard Power, what you're doing there, and then we'll dive into like the Ohio site you guys are building. Recently, I saw Max at the Bitcoin Miami conference. We talked a little bit about what you guys are up to with nuclear power, but I mean, you guys are making waves in Ohio, which I think is going to be up there in terms of competition with Texas pretty soon, mining. So definitely got to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, definitely. So commercial director with Standard Power, maybe what you saw was, I generally refer to how I approach things as strategic Bitcoin mining. And so my role with Standard Power is client facing. We host the largest miners in the world, the ones you've heard of, the ones that you haven't. We provide the capacity and the energy and the software tech stack for them to stand up their operations. Our site in Conesville, Ohio, we're building out, it's going to be 1.2 gigawatts, so 1,200 megawatts. Yeah, it's a lot.
That's so big.
If it's not the largest in the Western Hemisphere when it's done, it's going to be right up there. It'll be bigger than Rockdale. Love the ride, guys. Love what they're doing in Texas. There may be one I've heard of that might fill out to be a little bit bigger, but regardless, it's in Ohio, incredibly friendly political jurisdiction there. In fact, our friend Warren Davidson, a congressman from Ohio, was the one that led the charge recently to squash the proposed tax on mining of 30% on the electric usage. So it was exciting to see a representative from our adopted home state take the lead on that. Very important. So my role with Standard Power is to meet meet potential clients that might be interested in setting up shop at our campus. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. But then I'm also looking inward to the company, helping make sure that our software stack that we're putting in place is everything that we need it to be. And that's anything from, you know, automated billing. We're going to be integrating Sonota with the Lightning Network for instant settlement payments. But then also we're fully integrated into the grid in terms of demand response and providing ancillary services. So, making sure that those tech stacks like a Foreman, like a Voltus, like a Lancium, that those are there as well to enable the miners to do not only demand response that we require to do in order to avoid the highest peak hour of the year, but then also to do economic curtailments and to help them operate their business model in a way that makes the most sense for them. So that's my role. I'm not, I just make sure that that's kind of all coming together and then talking about it with folks to see if it could be a fit for them.
Love it. Let's talk about the Ohio facility a little bit more. 1.2 gigawatts is like freaking huge for people who probably need a sense of that. What would you normally compare that to? And then tell us a little bit about the demand response stuff for Ohio. I wonder if there's any difference between Ohio's demand response and Texas, or if it's all sort of the same thing, because we always talk about Texas demand response, but not other jurisdictions.
Demand response as a concept, it does exist outside of Texas. And, you know, it was what I was working at Duke Energy, what I was working on at Duke Energy before I made the move to where I am now. And so it exists all over the place. And Ohio is similar in that regard, in terms of market structure to Texas. It is a deregulated market. And so you have the ability to bid into the market and provide ancillary services and curtailments back to the system to get compensated for them in very similar ways that happens in Texas. So that's really exciting. In terms of the 1.2 gigawatts, what does that mean? I think, you know, for those that are aware of the demand response event in Texas, that was incredible. It was probably the largest one in human history over Christmas weekend this past winter. That probably not necessarily single-handedly, but if it didn't happen, they would have had blackouts. But that was probably around 1 to 2 to 1.5 gigawatts. I've heard maybe even upwards of 1.8 gigawatts. But that's how much shut off in Texas over the Christmas weekend. And so our site of 1.2 gigawatts kind of compares to the entire demand response that happened in Texas. Another way to think of it is, you know, a really large gas-fired power plant could be like 500 megawatts. You know, a massive nuclear power plant could be like 1.2 gigawatts. So basically, we're taking over the site of an old coal-fired power plant that's being demolished as we speak. Mm-hmm. I got to see that. That was pretty cool. And that was one of the second largest in the country in terms of coal-fired power plants, which means our spot is also one of the largest interconnection points in the country. And so, yeah, 1.2 gigawatts is really big. And, you know, if someone's got a small commercial mining operation, you know, that's maybe not too serious, but like, it's kind of a, you know, I know some guys that had run a great operation in Graham, North Carolina. They're at around 11 megawatts, right? They've scaled up over the years from 1 megawatt to 5 megawatts to, you know, so that's 11 megawatts. Our site's 1200 megawatts. And then maybe just one last comparison is like, you know, a Walmart supercenter, they might use 1 to 2 to 3 megawatts, you know, of power, mm-hmm. or capacity even. They might not even be using that all the time. This is hundreds of Walmart supercenters, if not maybe 1,000.
I like that comparison. That helps me kind of conceptualize a little more. I'm sure it does for the audience too. if they don't work in power. Tell me about like the energy side of this Ohio facility, and then maybe also a little bit about like the sort of hosting contracted partners you're looking for. You mentioned like lots of different firms are currently working with you guys. I'm sure stuff that NDA can't talk about it, but the power side first, like it's mostly nuclear, right?
Yeah, so we're grid connected. As I mentioned, we're taking over the site of this coal-fired power plant and the interconnection that it had to the grid. So now instead of the energy from the coal plant being pushed out into the system, we're receiving energy from the system. So it's grid mix. But that said, our power contracts that we have available, we are able to partner directly with nuclear energy facilities on the same system and get, they call them emission-free energy credits or EFECs. And, you know, people can have opinions about energy credits or it's, you know, admittedly it is an abstraction, but I think when it comes to Bitcoin mining and nuclear energy, the pairing is so tight that it makes a lot of sense. And so our clients are able to receive these nuclear or emission-free energy credits, and they settle on the PJM market, so they can say that they're basically being powered by nuclear. And when you have the nuclear baseload generation just right in line with the mining load, it makes a lot of sense. It's like, okay, that's not as abstract as say a renewable energy credit that's like solar doing this and then someone's electricity usage doing this, which is really meaningless. But yeah, otherwise we just have the standard grid mix in Ohio. That said, our next project will probably be behind the meter at a nuclear facility in eastern Pennsylvania. So that's really exciting. That nuclear facility was actually being scheduled to shut down. And so we're coming in, we're going to offload half of it for our mining operation. You know, this is in developments. It's not a totally done deal yet, but we're very excited about it. And then the other half will stay on the grid. And then of course, if we need to curtail operations and push our half into the system, we'll be able to do that. But
yeah,
we definitely are very big fans of nuclear energy. Hopefully in the next 5 to 10 years, hopefully it doesn't take much longer than that. Once the coal plant's gone, it's quite likely we'll be looking to install a small modular nuclear reactor on this site. And again, this is happening in rural America. It couldn't be more exciting having industry return to these parts of the world that have had industry leave them, like this coal plant. Our other smaller facility that's up and running, it's just 60 megawatts, about 10 minutes away. It's an old paper mill that was shut down and abandoned. And, you know, with this industry leaving, you know, everything else leaves. That's why these towns are here.
Yeah.
Because they had industry. And then when the industry goes, there's nothing left. And so it's really exciting to see the opportunities that are coming in for rural America. And I think Mike Hobart coined a term, Renaissance 2.0. And I really like that term, rural revitalization.
Yeah.
And man, I think these towns, and they're probably going to become cities in over the coming 5 to 10 years. And it's going to be incredible to see where they end up, because Bitcoin mining is just the start. Like that's just the anchor tenant basically. And then our plan is to build out from there.
Yeah. We talked about that a little bit, but it's kind of like the ESG thing of the G there, the governance, being a good member of a community, being a good neighbor. Any stories that have stuck out so far from your time at Standard Power and like operating these communities and how they're like responding to Bitcoin miners coming in?
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't be happier to have us there. You know, when we did the ribbon cutting for our smaller facility in Coshocton, you know, the mayor was there. I think the lieutenant governor was there. We might have had a senator and a congressman too. Everyone's excited to see this industry returning back to rural America to take advantage of infrastructure and to build out new infrastructure. You know, we're definitely going to be setting up education facilities and technical training facilities in these communities, because we're going to need local talent that can come in and help us run these operations. As we were talking about earlier, these are massive industrial scale operations. And so we're going to need We're going to need people on site 24/7 that are technically capable. That's getting set up, you know, and then it just expands further than that. You know, sponsor the Girl Scouts, sponsor the local sports teams. It's all going to be happening. And yeah, it's a similar story. You know, Raya tells the great story from Rockdale, and it's all true.
Yeah,
it's all true. You have these people, you get the tax base. You have people now being hired to do these technical jobs I was just mentioning before that are now going out to eat at restaurants. They might want to get new windows or new paint, or you know, upgrade their homes, refurbish their homes. So now they're hiring local contractors. It's just the second, third order, and fifth order impacts of projects like these. You know, can't be overstated.
So let's go back in time a little bit. I think most people that are familiar with you probably are familiar either from like you popping around conferences. I feel like you do a good job with that. And then also the podcast you did with Troy Cross from 2 years ago, talking about your time at Duke and sort of...
That was just one year ago.
It was only 1 year ago now? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Time flies.
Not even yet. It dropped on June 25th of last year.
Wow. I thought it was 2 years ago now. Well, it tells you about crypto. Things go so fast. The Duke energy story there made headlines for a lot of people. Like, Duke is a huge energy provider in the U.S. and the fact that they were like looking into this. So like your name became just like synonymous between the two. Tell us a little bit of the backstory there for the audience who's not familiar with it. And then tell us about the transition from Duke into what you're doing now.
Yeah. So, you know, my role at Duke Energy, I was there for almost 3 years. I was recruited to I was at the nexus of new technologies on the grid, system operations, rate designs, regulatory policy, and demand response. So a big part of what I did was working on new customer programs for smart thermostats, for electric vehicle charging, for battery storage, rooftop solar, time of use rates, our legacy demand response programs. So that was kind of my role within Duke. And then I started looking at Bitcoin mining and had the aha moment, like, wow, you know, if we could design a customer to achieve exactly what we're trying to achieve, and we were starting from scratch, like, this is what we would design. You can't ask for anything better than this. And so then I just started trying to have those conversations internally. You know, generally, you got to socialize the concept, and then maybe you need to get you need to do studies, you need to get outside consultants. So this is pretty standard procedure, you know, because ultimately, if you want to end up going to the regulatory commission to file for a new program or a new rate design, you need to have stuff that in place to back up why it makes sense, right? You can't just go in and tell them, we're going to do this. That's not how it works. And so I just kind of started going down that path with respect to Bitcoin mining and, you know, having those conversations with system planning engineers, talking to our key account reps, our salesmen, if you will, like who is tapping you on the shoulder? Who does want to interconnect our system? What does the industry look like from your perspective? Talking to the engineer and system operators, like, well, and I already knew what the challenge is facing. Like, that's what I've been dealing with at the electric industry for 10 years now inside, was I know the challenges that they're facing in terms of integrating unreliable intermittent generation on the system, in terms of trying to build out electric vehicle charging infrastructure, in terms of, you know, customers adopting new internet connected technologies like smart thermostats, and and then doing rooftop solar and battery storage. I was all aware of how we can use that. And so trying to help them understand, look, guys, like, Bitcoin mining actually is everything that you've been looking for.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was my role within Duke. I basically took it on. And so I was the one spinning up that study with the outside consultant, doing the market assessment and the technology assessment of Bitcoin mining to help put in place the pieces, so that ultimately when they do go to the commission and file for like a special rate design or a special demand response program, they're going to have this backup ready to go. They've done their due diligence. And so that's just what I shared with the world, that what I was working on. I couldn't be happier than I did it. You know, there was a little bit of consternation, I suppose, that I didn't do. You know, usually if I know I'm doing the right thing and I'm doing the right thing and I share it, I go to conferences, like you said, I talk about it. That's been my life for a while now. It's just now I'm talking about Bitcoin mining. I used to be talking about rooftop solar, community solar, battery storage, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it wasn't a surprise that Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining was a sensitive topic to one of the largest electric utilities in the country. So anyway, it was everything I wanted, everything I needed to transition my career to be where I am now, on the kind of the other side of the fence, working with the electric utilities, but from the Bitcoin mining perspective, and then but still pursuing all that strategic grid integration and everything that Bitcoin mining has to offer to the electric grid, but then as we talk about the rural communities and just our, yeah, it's such an incredible technology. So,
I want to go on two things that you brought up. The first being like working at a Bitcoin mining company versus working at a traditional energy company, which is probably as very process oriented, slow, makes decisions methodically, has things set in place versus Bitcoin companies, maybe a little faster, like cobbling things together. So I want to get your take on that and then finish the conversation talking about like moving into Bitcoin mining, moving into finding a job in Bitcoin. But to the first part, what is the difference been between like working at a Duke or other energy companies in the past versus working at a Bitcoin mining company? I mean, I assume that most Bitcoin mining companies are a little bit more structured because they're dealing with like real assets versus, say, like a Bitcoin startup that's mostly on the software front. But what's it been the difference between those two positions?
My role already in the utility was a little more dynamic than most, and so perhaps it wasn't that big of a transition. But certainly, you know, when we're talking about an electric utility like Duke Energy, one of the largest in the country, or the one I was at for 6 years previously out in Arizona, which was a lot smaller, but they're both you know, it's not Texas and Ohio. This is a regulated jurisdictions where the utility is a regulated monopoly. They own everything from the generation, transmission, distribution, all the way to the customer meter and the billing to that customer. So they own everything, and they have a relationship with their regulator. And so, you know, just it makes sense in a lot of ways. Most people, almost all everyone working at the electric utility certainly takes their job of providing reliable, safe, affordable, and now clean energy to the grid. Like, they take it very seriously, and that's always that's that that really was something I was proud of, and that meant a lot to me, and you know, obviously others that were there. You know, just seeing how seriously people take safety, take reliability. But certainly when you're talking about a regulated monopoly, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what industry it is, you can tend to develop malaise. You know, the you can't sneeze without getting permission from the regulator, you know. And so there's good aspects of regulation that make sure that your power doesn't go out on Christmas, or at least it's highly unlikely that that will happen. But yeah, it you know, even with my experience with Bitcoin, like socializing the concept of Bitcoin mining as a grid resource, it's just like, you know, just banging your head against the wall over and over again. And, you know, we've been working on this thing for over 2 years now, 2.5 years, and still like nothing super concrete has come out of it yet, except for some reports, which are good. But yeah, so I wanted to break out of that. I saw what was going on in the Bitcoin mining industry. I saw the life, the energy, the capital, just everything moving and shaking. And so that's where I wanted to be. And, you know, also just the electric utilities, I think a lot of them, they have the negative connotations. You know, some of it rightfully deserved, but some of it not so rightfully deserved. You know, like, everybody loves a reliable power when it's hot or cold. And so it takes a certain amount of responsibility and regulation to ensure that that's the case. They really have. They're so timid now of negative headlines and this whole energy transition and, you know, decarbonization and all that. They're very, very I don't know. I feel like they're a little skittish, to be honest, and they've just been. I think it's a little bit survivorship bias too, and this is kind of getting to a topic I want to touch on with the ESG and everything, is that anyone that had an issue or a concern about integrating endless amounts of unreliable, intermittent, arbitrary generation on the grid, like wind and solar, those people are gone or they're quiet. You know, the ones that have been promoted through the industry are the ones that have been cheerleading solar and wind and now batteries. And so I think that you're starting to see, I have concerns, you're starting to see the impacts of that. And, you know, you have the utility say, well, we can't build out more capacity unless it's solar. It's like, well, so what? Are we just done? Is this just like, we're just going to put a hard cap on human civilization? Is that it? Like, what do you mean you can't build out more capacity? And so I think there's some real issues that they're going to be struggling with. And ultimately, we're going to be struggling with, because it's our reliable grid that is going to be impacted by this. But I wanted to break out from there as well. And so, you know, it's much more entrepreneurial, much more dynamic in where I'm at now with Standard Power. You know, I'm dealing with guys that build things and get things done. You know, my team that I'm so excited to have been brought on board, you know, what they were doing before was they were developing some of the largest, tallest skyscrapers in Manhattan. You know, like, they know how to permit incredibly complicated, sticky projects, you know? And so what better than one of the largest coal plants in the country that's being demolished? Like, yeah, we'll take that on. We're not actually demolishing the coal plant, but we're setting up shop right next to it. So we're used to dealing with large infrastructure and getting it done. Like, no, this isn't going to be a 5-year project. This is going to be a 9-month project. Like, let's go. We got capital on the table and we have a game plan and we're going to make it happen. And no concepts too big to consider. And so that's why we're already considering a small modular reactor, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years. And yeah, so couldn't be more excited with where I'm at. And just the alignment of incentives and all of that is incredible.
Love all that. I want to go into like finding a job in Bitcoin, which I kind of prefaced earlier. There's a lot of headlines right now about layoffs. So like Coinbase laid off like 1,200 people, not super long.
Yeah, don't work at Coinbase.
Yeah, I'm going to list a bunch of like normie crypto places. Like Binance laid off like 30% of staff. I've seen some other stuff. A lot of headlines around there, right? What is your take on getting involved in Bitcoin from a jobs perspective? What were some things that were like helped you like get in there? Obviously the background. Not everyone has the background of like doing what you did. But that being said, I'm sure there's some other things that people can pick up from. Yeah. And, you know, you brought your passion in it that with the industry just so perfectly. And I think that can be a story for a lot of people, not just you.
Yeah, absolutely. If I had just, you know, let's say I just did the conversation with Troy and then I sat on my hands, like I'd probably be, I don't know what I'd be doing. It wouldn't be this. You know, so I think from my perspective, you know, I was looking at bitcoinerjobs.com. I was on Bitcoin Twitter. So I think those are important tools that are just kind of like a low level baseline for anyone that's serious about getting into the industry. And I think that if you are, you're absolutely right to have this mindset. You know, the transition's happening, right? The bridges are being built. This is a whole new system that's being developed with Bitcoin, and it applies to your fiat mining job as well, you know? So I think it is important to be thinking about redirecting your career into the Bitcoin ecosystem. And so Bitcoin Twitter and Bitcoiner Jobs are just like easy, obvious places to start. But go to the Bitcoin, I mean, I went to the Bitcoin meetup, you talk to people, you meet some people. And then, yeah, going to conferences is important. You mentioned, I'm still approaching my first year anniversary. Mining Disrupt was the first conference I went to, and that was late July last year. So those are really good investments. You know, yeah, it costs a little money, maybe. I mean, you're going to have to travel there probably. But finding a Bitcoin conference that's close to you and then going there reach out to people. Like, you know, I reached out to Dennis Porter on Twitter and shared the podcast with him. I reached out to Troy, which is how the podcast even happened in the first place. You know, I'm open. I find all these people in the ecosystem are generally open. They might be really busy, but they're open to hearing from folks. And if you have an interest, if you have a passion, if you have a skill set, reach out, share it with them. You know, maybe find someone, you know, like with Troy, and it made sense because he was talking about, you know, Bitcoin mining being good for renewables and being good for balancing the grid. And so I was like, hey, Troy, like, here's what I'm working on at Duke Energy. And, it, you know, it just made all the sense in the world. So if you have a similar type person or influencer or personality in Bitcoin that you like, when they talk about what they do or what they're interested in, and you're like, yeah, that's what I want to do, like, reach out to that person and see what they say. So I think it's just really important. You got to get your hands dirty. You got to be active and don't give up. Probably it's going to be very unlikely that the first interview you have or the first company that you're in touch with, it's probably unlikely that they're going to end up being the ones. But, you know, for example, I was in Washington, D.C. On behalf of Satoshi Action Fund with Dennis Porter in the Senate office of the freshman senator of North Carolina, talking about the benefits of Bitcoin mining on the grid. And at that point, I didn't know it yet, but I was meeting my future CEO. And then later, there were six of us plus the senator. And then later that night, we're having dinner, a different six, but me, Dennis, and then what turns out to be my future CEO is sitting across the table. And we were having conversations. I might have been getting a little toxic or something with a national defense security fellow, whatever. And at some point, I turned away from her and I looked across the table to him. And I was like, so, hey, Max, are you hiring? You know, like, yeah. And here we are. So,
that's awesome.
You know, you got to go for it. It's not going to happen on its own. You got to make it happen. And there's a lot of ways to make it happen.
Awesome. Justin, where can we find like some of your socials or keep up with Standard Power?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter, JOrkney5. I don't do a whole lot of posting, but I do try to share my thoughts when I have them. And then Standard Power is on Twitter as well. So I think it's Standard Power is the Twitter handle. And I'm on Orange Pill app. So Justin on Orange Pill app.
Nice.
But yeah, I encourage everybody, you know, stay humble, stack stats, but then also just start getting ingrained in the ecosystem that you find that it exists around you, you know, your local meetup, Bitcoin app, and just start moving and shaking and things are almost guaranteed to work out.
Love it. Now, similar background about my story, same thing, is gonna meet people, start doing stuff. Justin, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Great, Will. Glad to make this happen. Looking forward to what comes next, man.